I have a better idea.
Yeah.
Of course I was meant to call the show because I was asked to call in.
Yeah.
But I have a better idea. How about we just get her on my show so she can explain the content of the book and try and I try and plug it as often as possible to get more people to buy it so that more people who can actually do something about it will do it. Because I don't know about you, but you know how Jesse Ventura once wrote a book that says, "I don't have time to bleed." I'm going to write a book one day that says, "I don't have time to read," because I really don't, man. I'm producing so much audio and video content every single day, it almost prohibits my ability to read other than, you know, reading.
Well, you know what you could do with this book? This book is such a zinger that what you could do is you can get on your radio show and she's divided into content, say about 30 chapters or I don't know how many because I don't have the book in front of me. And she adds them, and so, like, if you know a topic's going to come that day involving stuff that you'd have to see her chapter headings, you could just go on air and start reading it, and I guarantee one or two paragraphs, she'd be like, "Shit, should we keep reading?" "Yes, yes, keep reading. This is fucking good stuff." So, again, I know you don't read, but I recommend you add that to your archives, look at just the content pages, and then use that as a great source because you're talking about all the stuff, so you should you could quote from a reference from the sources from the study
she
did.
Why not just have her on the show so she can quote her own self?
Well, you'd have to ask her.
Yeah.
Well, here's what's going to happen, Vinny.
That's what I'm saying. I'm a favor of the business model of cutting out the middleman. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, I'm not the middleman.
Oh, yeah, but that's not what I'm referring to. What I'm referring to is, why read the book when you can just talk to the author?
If she's available, Vinny, for sure.
Here's what's going to happen, Vinny. You're going to be on a lot of flights from New Zealand going to A, B, C, and you can read a book on the plane.
Well, maybe eventually, until my criminal conviction for selling people marijuana kind of wears off from back when I was 20.
Exactly.
You know.
I wouldn't worry about things like that. You know, that's spent.
Well, yeah. I mean, while I'm being up there, irradiated so close to the upper atmosphere in an airline plot after
you're
having
afraid
my balls tingled by the TSA and what have you.
You haven't got a fear of planes as well.
No, but I have a fantasy about having a body cavity search done on me.
Say again, the last little bit, I missed that.
Did I say fantasy? Having a body cavity search done on me by a very, very sexy TSA agent.
Is that right? Often? No.
No, that's reality.
Every night.
No, that's
no. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as soon as I hear that slap of the rubber glove, oh yeah.
What's it like for immigration there in New Zealand, Vinny? Is there a lot of, you know, like there's this kind of movement of people that are kind of transitioning from different areas? Have you got like an influx of people?
Okay.
I can't think of the geography of where you are.
Let me talk numbers. All right. So let's start with Finland. It's a country that has 500 immigrants that are allowed in every year. It's a country of 14 million people. All right. It's monoculture. It's very similar. Everywhere you go is the same. In New Zealand, we have 4 million people, and we allow in 50,000 plus immigrants a year. So our culture is becoming multicultural very, 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 very quickly. And
quick.
What New Zealand is? Christchurch is.
Oh, no.
Where are you referring to?
Not Christchurch. Auckland. Auckland's
okay.
Where all the immigration happens. So of pretty much every single one of those immigrants always comes into Auckland. It's the largest city. It's where all the immigration hubs is. And so what we've got is we've got cultural suburbs now. So then you go to Sandringham, that's where a lot of Indian people live. You go to Otahuhu, that's where a lot of people from Pacific Islands live. If you go to what's it called, Howick, out in East Auckland. That's where a lot of Chinese communities are. If you go,
it sounds like a solution to your not liking to fly problems. You can get within about a 10-mile radius, you can get every possible cuisine on Earth.
Yeah, and to the north of us, we have a very big South African communities, and we have Americans, British, and Australians, and Irish, and it's really kind of becoming more like a rainbow city. New Zealand's like a test ground in a lot of ways for the New World Order, and apparently one of the ways to conquer a country is to dilute its culture. If you can muddy a culture up enough with enough different cultural influences all simultaneously, if any one issue affects everybody, nobody will actually have the cultural resonance field or the sole command of the language that everybody speaks in order to rise up against whatever's oppressing them. And in so doing, you make everybody a slave by giving everybody their cultural freedoms in every place, everywhere. It's really quite interesting because it gets enforced on you.
Yeah, you should demand they speak English. No, put the signs in English. We're fucking shopping at your place, and you're going to smile and say hello, and everyone's going to be real friendly, and you're going to dig this. We're even going to start picking up some of your women. Try that. Oh, that'll undermine the New World Order.
That's no, my, I think what I was trying
maybe
to
not. I'm just being ridiculous.
Was it's more
well,
to do with the
like,
weather and stuff.
I can.
Like,
I don't I get me wrong, brother. I know you're looking. I'm not saying what you're saying is not real. When you come in, and if there is a sense that the culture is now just paving a way for some kind of new thing, where there isn't a sense of having a unified original culture, but I don't know what to say to that. I don't know what to, is that also the intimacy of the electric environment that it brings us all together and brings people all in, it eliminates borders.
Well, I'm not a fan of eliminating borders, because that way we'd have to have one law for all. And if you've got one law for all, it means if you don't like the law where you're living, you can't go anywhere. You know, like if you don't like communism, you can't go out of China and go somewhere where there isn't hardcore ruthless communism, where you can't even protest lest you get sent to a forced labor camp. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nice to feel there's options. Nice to feel there's options.
Yeah. I mean, even if you can't access the other countries because you're in a forced labor camp, it's nice to know the grass really is greener on the other side.
Well, what are you going to say about that? Or do you have a guilt that you're born in a... I don't know what to say. It's just weird. It's like, are you taking the weight of, like, the misery of, like, 4 billion people on your shoulders?
Well, you know,
I'm not saying that you could ignore it, but I'm just wondering if it's too huge a load you're sort of expecting to have to carry. I don't know.
No. Well, the thing is, I only have to carry my own line. That's all I have to do. But, you know, I like to, you know, when you lift weights and you kind of, you find that you're really weak at first and you start lifting them, but they start to get easier. And before you know it, you're lifting even more than your own body weight. I'm thinking psychologically and emotionally, a man could, over time, be trained to literally have the weight of the world put on his shoulders. And I'm going to try and find out if that's possible without breaking the man. I want to try and delve into that that kind of real painful reality.
Is your wife into this? Are you going to do your fiance into this?
Well, we were talking about race and different cultures coming in, you know. Personally, I don't have a problem with people. I mean, let's say somebody comes into America, it doesn't matter what language they speak or whatever, do they identify as being American? Do they support the Constitution? Do they want to live with freedom, liberty, and justice for all? That's all I want to know.
I would agree. That's important. I would think that is important to keep a consensus of those values.
I'm thinking if maybe some of your fire inside you was tied with the fire mountains of New Zealand. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that, Vinny?
The fire
mountains, the chaos theory, the flap of a wing of a butterfly kind of creates a, you know, that kind of belief of like when the volcano blows, it's like because everybody is thinking skullduggery, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, there was thoughts don't necessarily manifest reality a lot of the time. Like, I know that there's plenty of people who got shot who didn't think they were gonna. You know? So thinking is not reality as much as we might like it to. That's why people escape reality using drugs and alcohol, because reality really does suck a lot of the times. However, you can enjoy life to a degree, despite the fact that there is all this skullduggery around you. And if volcanoes and everything and what have you are going off because of people's latent residual psychic feelings or whatever, because let me get this straight. A volcano erupted because a couple of people exposed scumbaggery. Okay? Is that the clear line of logic? Have you got documented evidence? Like, point A over here is somebody exposed scumbaggery, and point Z over here is a volcano erupting. Please, fill in the blanks. I don't see cause and effect.
When is the last time a volcano erupted in New Zealand? Is it 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago? Or?
No, it was like last year. They happen all the time. It's called the Ring of Fire, baby. We've got volcanoes up and down the country going off every now and again. Yeah, it's great. It's fun. And they don't. Yeah. It's not really, it doesn't really cause too much disasters. I mean, the Christchurch earthquake, which was a heart attack, according to a lot of research has been conducted by investigative journalist Ben Vidgen down there, it's caused a lot more damage than most of the volcanic eruptions since, I think, the 1886 disaster, which killed like well over 100 people on a train or something, got washed away by a mudslide. You know, so when you live in the South
impressions
Pacific and volcanoes are a reality.
It's tattooed on everyone's memory, you know, that 1896 to the. But this was an earthquake that happened, wasn't it? It wasn't a volcanic eruption. And it's part of the ideology, you know, it seeps into the education system and the whole way of thinking. But that fire inside you is very unique. You've managed to mold it in a way that's attracting, like, the interesting news, you know, real life stories of people that have experienced common things that are united all around the world. But that actual fire that you have there for your success in your particular area, it seems that maybe some of this is present. If you
can I explain
understand.
Something?
Yeah.
It's far easier to interview somebody about something really bad that happened to them and get the information that you need out of them so that they can tell their story if they believe, truly believe, that you actually care and are actually listening.
Trust.
And the only way to get that is to actually care and actually listen. And because I have so many diverse people expressing so many diverse ideas, not only just trauma, but also, you know, good, wonderful discoveries and what have you, because I actually listen and I actually care, I get the best out of them, and they go away from the show. Usually the conversation after the show ends, after 2 hours, they're like, wow, that was quick. It really is the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. And, you know, that's right. It's because we're having fun. You know, life shouldn't be about all being serious. Sure, serious stuff is going on, but you don't need to let the pain and the trauma of it dominate your life without applying the remedy with the poison. It's the same way fruit delivers fructose into your system without it being broken down like alcohol, like it does with the high fructose corn syrup. It's because every piece of fruit is packaged with fiber, which stops the fructose from being absorbed into your liver, and instead winds up getting digested properly. You see what I'm saying? That's what nature does. It packages the poison with the cure. And I think that's precisely what I like to embody in almost everything that I do, is I like the poison because, oh, it's so tasty, oh, it's so sugary, oh, it stimulates me. But if you ain't got something to heal you from that pain and that trauma delivered at the same time, you wind up accumulating your body and your mind and your soul full of toxic parasitical crap that just turns you into your own worst enemy.
Yeah, that's important stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
And I think the Batman movie really encapsulated this quite well, you know, with Harvey Two-Face. You either die the good guy or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I live by that kind of to a large extent because I notice a lot of really really dark tendencies in my character, and I'm really, really watchful of them. You know, like a little bit of narcissism here or there, being a little bit being a little bit up yourself or a know-it-all there. And I really try and pull myself up on that. And what I encourage other people to do is to pull me up on it as well, because if I'm being so good at manipulating myself into thinking that I can do no wrong, then I think it's a moral duty of those around me to remind me and stop me from doing it.
Mm-hmm. No, you've done well. You've passed the test. It's very, very good.
Well, what's a golden rule back in the day? Treat others the way you want to be treated.
Yeah. And I feel like because a lot of my listeners and my guests are my elders and in many ways, my intellectual superiors on many topics, is you have to remain very, very humble and give people the respect they deserve. I mean, if you busted your hump to help people or whatever and then somebody comes out and accuses you of doing it for yourself, you get really incensed, you get inflamed and what have you. You fly off the handle. You have one of those reptilian brain responses where you said something that you wouldn't have said had you taken 10 breaths first and calmed the frack down before you start lashing out at everybody because you hate yourself so much because you haven't actually had a justification for your existence outside of what you do for a living.
Everyone's tying in on this reptilian brain now, and then they tie it in with David Icke's kind of stuff, but it's common stuff. It's the thing that's in the education system, the left brain, the right brain. We know that the reactionary, and you have to know these certain things when you're dealing with people. Everyone is taught this now. It's not new information, although it is part of the mainstream curriculum now. And the thing is David Icke was writing about this in the 80s, but he was talking about it in his own coded way. And I know that you mentioned him before. How did you get on with David when you spoke to him?
As well as you can, being, you know, a young man who's, like, from New Zealand going, oh, my God, I'm interviewing David Icke. Isn't that awesome? You know.
Yeah, good content for your show and archives. Right?
Oh,
felt like, yeah, it was like, man, I'm yeah, this is the good stuff.
Yeah, it's like almost as if because I got to interview him, not only do I get access firsthand to talk with this guy who's accomplished so much and has such wonderful ideas in the way that he expresses them, but also it's there online forever so that people can't deny that it took place, and it gives me credibility just having them on the website. And that's really good because there's so much important stuff that gets talked about on my show that ain't just the big boys, you know. I've had so many activists that have...
You have to deal with all the same media effects. You've got to get the things to draw the extra credibility of speaking to these more high-profile people to bring attention to the lower-profile stuff. Is that what you're expressing?
Well, I say that you cover everything, and as a result, everything comes to me.
Yeah, I don't know what Bob thinks of David Icke. Does he have some basic things that he's been saying for how long has he been doing it? 20 years or something, this guy, or whatever? It doesn't matter how long. What are the basic thing he says? Can you summarize what he says?
Basic things are, he doesn't like the encroachment of tyranny over freedom, and wants people to be free and clean and healthy and happy.
That's odd. Okay, what's the second thing?
To be spiritually aware. To be spiritually
aware. He was a very successful
footballer.
He wants people to be aware. Is that what he wants people to be aware of his information or patterns that other writers are also laying out that are similar to him, kind of watch out, they're tightening the noose and bringing up the water path.
He talked about being a perpetual student to a degree, that nobody knows it all and you've got to seek out as much information as you can on everything to make up your mind.
That's
let the information guide your thinking process rather than the other way around.
I suppose whether that would impose any form of accuracy or if that just reflects the swath of information and just grime dripping everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's an old saying, even if a story isn't real, it can still be a good story.
True as well. I mean, damn, look at, absolutely, absolutely. So that was point two about being aware or something and opening yourself up to as many sources as possible. Is that to paraphrase kind of what he was saying?
More like to be open, not to reject information because of
right.
the previously held to belief, but to look
biases
at it for the
that, right.
sake.
So you read UFO magazines and Nazi literature and all that kind of thing, even if you don't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you got to study things properly.
So if I see you reading that, I won't think, no, he's into that. No, but that's the problem. So you got to hide. Yeah, but you don't read, so you won't have that issue.
Yeah, but I've listened to recordings and watched videos of people who deny that the concentration camps have happened and countless UFO researchers, talk to people who claim to have invented free energy devices, people who...
I think did Bob mention the battery thing? Obviously he said, well, no, and you said he would be killed for it, so he stopped discussing it, which is probably sensible. But, yeah, but again, see, you've come to the right place, but continue.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that all the things you're saying, it's almost like if you're, anyways, you'll love when you research Bob and Connie a little more just after, like later on, you'll be amazed how much information and stuff they've already put out. Yeah, you'll have to see, it's just a vast archive. But, and then you'll see why tonight Bob isn't saying anything. Or so far. He's maybe coming around soon. I mean, maybe he's getting something to eat or, you know, a little, like, fresh air or nap or what? Go ahead.
He might be exhausted from doing all this talk radio.
Well, he's been up for how many hours? About 52 hours? Not only that, I don't know if you haven't been tuning in. He's been going very, like, energetic. There's been certain ways where he gets a little slowed down a bit and maybe not quite as sharp and, you know, but yeah, no, it's amazing. Even just before he signed off, he was pretty revved up. So, I mean, I'm getting tired, but yeah, no, I'm sure he'll be coming back soon.
Oh, wow.
But continue, my brother.
More power to him. And his product, I've heard so many people who have tried his product, and it really, really, really works. To the point where they're just like totally amazed, kind of thing. So yeah.
Well, you're into that kind of thing, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah. I mean, for some reason, I have this kind of aversion of purchasing things. You know.
Well, you don't have to. You get the free sample.
Yeah,
but I'm not. I mean, I'm sounding like I'm trying to sell you something. And I'm not, but let's put it this way to start. You said you want to be just all your life and blah, 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 and all that stuff. Well, these, you know, that's your choice, you know, and these guys have been just all their life, and Bob's 92, you know, so, I mean, in Plato's Republic, as much as people find it repugnant, that's one of the things he says, that justice in the end is, well, no, Bob would disagree, but he's not on the line, but in the book, he expresses that justice is like, you know, how the universe ultimately is and in harmony and expressing that, and so ultimately that will win in the end, but what it appears in the shadows and what the skullduggery is that the cheaters will win, and it appears they do, and the psychopaths will get the jobs, and they'll wreck it for the other people. But if Bob was here,
name me some evil people that have been assassinated. See, deathly silence. Name me some good people.
Nice, buddy. You can open your radio shows with each one of those. They use that as your opening question to many guests. That's great. I wish Bob was here.
The point is, the exact opposite of karma is true. If you're a good person, you don't hurt nobody, boy, you're going to get a real harsh life. If you're a dick, you fuck over everybody, mate, your life is going to be bitches and roses forever.
Okay? Yes and no. But you know what? Guess what? I know some people that have the latter but didn't, you know, I know people that are really successful and did it just by being smart and not cheating. And they're respected as a result, and they're happy, and their employees like them because they treat them like family, because they know, it's why do it nasty.
Yeah.
But so, you know what I mean? So there's people, what?
Yeah. I know, but we're talking about like a rule of thumb. Just because murder is illegal doesn't mean it doesn't happen, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I sort of do.
And I plan to challenge that paradigm myself, because I'd really like to, have wealth, security, and comfort, whilst at the same time being able to get down to the nitty gritty and really help people when they're in desperate need of media coverage. I mean, one of the goals of Guerrilla Media, is to give the activists the tools and the skills that they need to go out, and so that they can create their own audience, their own support network, so that not only do they not need help or funding from any big entities or whatever, or any media coverage from anybody to suck up to anybody for something that they want. They have their own power, they have their own machinations, and if we empower individuals who have proved themselves exceptional at what it is that they do, would wind up having a much better society, I think, because at the moment we seem to be normal people giving up all of the powers that we have to people who are not exceptional. And if they are exceptional, they're exceptionally bad. And I don't think that's a good idea.
Sounds like you feel there's pockets for you to create your own situation and maneuver even within that rubric. If that is rubric, is a description of how you feel the society is structuring itself now.
Do you feel that somebody who works till about 3 a.m. in the morning most days of the week doesn't usually get a day off, is often doing multiple hours of radio per day, giving coverage to people's important ideas and what have you, and spending all of their available time editing and promoting those other people's ideas, which the day before I'd never even been exposed to in the first place, just so that person can get the coverage that they deserve that the mainstream media won't give them? Do you think that person deserves to live in pain, poverty, constant anxiety?
Well, with that kind of working from like 7 in the morning till midnight, every day, if the work's kind of nice, I guess it's not so bad. I mean, if you're in prison in Russia, penal colony, I think that's a hard labor. That's what you have to do, but be more mundane. But it sounds pretty painful. It sounded like you were describing being in jail or something, except the work was kind of nicer, a little bit nicer. You had to do telephone service stuff or something. It sounds pretty ghetto-y.
We're all pretty much prisoners to our line of work.
Yeah.
It just turns out that my line of work is to free people from prisons.
That's wicked, dude. I Well, you got stuff to wake up in the morning and do. I'm not saying leave now, but I'm just saying it sounds like you like what you're doing.
To a large extent, it's actually you kind of have thoughts of this man, I can't be bothered doing it today or something like that. You have doubts, and then I look at all of these people that I've had on my show, have a look at all these listeners who send me all these accolades, see all this money people are donating, and I'm just like, you know what? Even if I didn't like doing it, I would still be doing it. Even if I hated it, I would still be doing it, because it just needs to be done. There's nobody else in New Zealand doing this, It desperately, desperately needed to be done. Somebody had to do it, and unfortunately there's nobody else in this country with the power to do it in the way that I am. And so the people with the power, the people with the gift of the gab, the people with the ability to put in those late nights, to embody the entrepreneurial spirit, I think it's a responsibility of theirs to help the community realize its own potential. Because I think Tony Robbins, motivational speaker right here, he had this belief that humanity is suffering from a crisis of faith. But it's not suffering from a crisis of faith in the system. It's not suffering from a crisis of faith in religion. We're suffering from a crisis of faith in ourselves. And that's the worst kind of thing to lose your faith in. If you lose faith in yourself, may God help you, you know. And I try to remind myself every day to have faith in myself, because I've got these two, I've got a number of folders on my desktop here that's full of abuse, trolls, and stuff like that, screenshots that I take. So whenever somebody abuses me or is mean to me or does something nasty, I record and document it for later, just in case this person starts trying to come after me in like a gang stalking kind of way. I'll have like a trail of evidence for which to expose their scumbaggery. But
don't people do that now? Eh? Everyone's surveilling everyone. I notice that when people come into my studio, it's like I'm playing them like just maybe some of my own jams, just, you know, we're hanging out, and then suddenly, like, you know, 5 minutes later, they're playing back on their cell phone. It's like, well, what the hell is that? How's it going here? Oh, I just recorded a little bit of it. Oh, really? And other people are doing it too, but they didn't say, hey, can I record some of that? They just like automatically just, you know, that's a whole different thing now too. People are just documenting every square inch of their situation, and like obviously when they bring the Google glasses in and Google contact lenses or whatever it's going to be, oh my God. I'm not going to complain. I get my flack taken away even by thinking of this. See, I don't want to think about this shit. Bob is right. You know, you get on the drops and, you know, focus on other stuff. And there's so many paths that are productive that you can channel your intellect and energy and passion into that'll yield amazing results. And then you can still deal with all the negative stuff that I think it's important you're dealing with.
It's about acknowledging that the bad stuff's there, not denying that it exists, though, you know. That's why I call the show The Lighter Side of Genocide, because...
Oh, brother, I love you, man. You're hilarious. You're funny, man. Yeah.
I mean, see, just because I like to look on the lighter side of genocide doesn't mean the genocide doesn't ever happen. All right, and you need to be prepared to deal with that kind of nasty stuff if you want to get to the really good stuff. I mean, like Indiana Jones, for example. Do you think he was able to get the golden monkey after walking a nice, beautiful path that had no obstacles, no poison darts, no nothing? Nah, he went through horrible struggles and terrible traps and tricks and giant spiders.
Now, remember with Indiana Jones, though, here's an important thing. Sorry to interject, but here's a really important memory. With Indiana Jones, he was running into Nazis, and here's somebody. Let's do top down. We'll spend the next. Can I just read you the forward to this book that's written by a guy named Michael Myers? So he's MM, but he's like a top down version. And this is kind of, he studied a lot of Mae Brussel too, and this is a book he wrote. And you will love this forward. Stop me if you. It's not very long. It might sound a little wordy. I don't think I'm too. You'll be pretty blown away just in. Well, let me start. You want me to do this because this actually relates to genocide as well. Can I go?
Go for your life, son.
Okay, the Kristallnacht, I think that's how it's pronounced, or Kristallnacht, was the name the Nazis gave to the evening of November 9th, 1938, the 15th anniversary of Adolf Hitler's first attempt to overthrow the German government. As in years past, the Nazi party bosses gathered to celebrate. Among them was Heinrich Himmler, Heinz Führer of the SS, who had planned an event to mark the anniversary. Following the beer hall celebrations, Himmler's SS set out to assault the Jewish citizenry. Before the evening was over, 119 synagogues were set on fire, 7,500 Jewish shops were looted or destroyed, 171 Jewish homes were burned, and 20,000 Jews were arrested and went to newly constructed labor camps. According to the Nazi records, 36 Jews were murdered that evening. Throughout Germany, Himmler's troops inflicted over 25 million marks worth of damage, 5 million in broken glass alone, hence the name the Kristallnacht. In the weeks that followed, German Jews were not only denied insurance claims, but were totally ousted from the economy and fined 1 billion marks for their abominable crimes. German Jews had suffered persecution before, but only at the hands of roving bands of brown shirts who acted out their personal prejudices under a government that turned a blind eye to their crimes. The Kristallnacht was the first assault to be officially sanctioned by the German government. It was the beginning of the Holocaust. In 6.5 years that followed, over 12 million Jews and other subhumans were exterminated in Nazi death camps. Combined with the casualties of World War II, the death toll is a staggering 60 million. Today, yeah, outside Munich... Go ahead, sorry. And I can continue because I'm right.
Oh, sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, you want me to continue? No, I know, it's just meaty stuff, isn't it? So I'm sure you've been wanting to interject it. I'll do a little more. You'll love this. Well, not love it on a... you're interested in this aspect of history. So today, outside Munich, near Dachau, the first and most infamous of the German Nazi death camps, there is a memorial to those who died in the Holocaust. Inscribed on the monument are the foreboding words of American philosopher George, I don't know if I pronounce it, Santayana? Have you heard of him? There's a guy named George Santayana, and he says, and you probably heard this quote, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to relive it." Okay, now that's going back to that period. The White Knight was the name the Reverend Jim Jones gave to the evening of November 18th, 1978, in which over 900 of his followers died in a mass suicide / murder ritual in Jonestown, Guyana, a community they had carved from the jungles of South America, sparked by their assassination of U.S. Congressman Leo Ryan. The predominantly black American cultists carried out the final performance of the bizarre White Knight they had rehearsed for years. Before the evening was over, 913 former U.S. citizens were dead, most from drinking a cyanide-laced concoction. For years, Jim Jones had warned his congregation that the Nazis had infiltrated the Central Intelligence Agency and other departments of the federal government to stage a second Holocaust, this time against the blacks and Native Americans. He claimed their only chance of survival was under his protection in the safe haven of Jonestown. Jones's warnings were correct, but he neglected to tell his congregation that it was he who was helping to perpetuate the coming ethnic war in America. Jonestown was a medical field test in mind control designed to evaluate two suspicious behavior modification drugs on a representative cross-section of black and Native American citizens. The unwitting human guinea pigs were divided into three test groups. 300 received small doses of drug A on a regular basis, 300 received drug B, and the remaining 300 acted as a control group and received no drugs at all. Jim Jones then staged his only definitive test of his control. He asked the followers to commit suicide. Those who did so voluntarily were considered under control. Those who refused were murdered, and the results so noted in the extensive medical records that are still missing to this day. Jones and several of his top aides were in the employ of the Central Intelligence Agency. Actually, his book is called "What Jones Sounds: The CIA Experiment." And then, when you read the book, he goes, "It's huger than that, obviously." At the time of the experiment, making the White Knight the first U.S. government-sanctioned persecution of a Native minority in peacetime. The 913 dead are important, but not as important as the yet untold millions. This is his book, so he has a bleak projection. Who will die? And actually, when you think of it, with the AIDS epidemic that came later, which he says claims in his book they developed there, is... the 913 dead are important, but not as important as the yet untold millions who will die if the results of the Jonestown experiment are implemented in society. As the Earth's resources steadily deplete, a second Holocaust becomes more and more probable. See, this is negative stuff, right? But I think we shouldn't be reading this on the... We can handle this on Bob's show, right? This is where Bob's sleeping. Well, he doesn't want to hang around for this, but
I'm not sleeping. I'm not.
Oh, you're here. Okay, hang on. Let me just finish the last thing because it ties up with the German one. I'm almost finished. As the Earth's resources steadily deplete, a second Holocaust becomes more and more probable. But, unlike the first, there will be no goose-stepping Nazis, swastikas, concentration camps, or gas ovens. People will just drop dead en masse or be reduced to zombie-like slaves to serve a master race. All that remains of the ultimate experiment that made this grim future possible are photographs of the carnage, and one in particular, surrounded by a field of corpses over the simple, unadorned throne of Jim Jones, hung the following hand-painted wooden sign: "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it." That's his prologue to his 570-page book. And there's a lot of neat stuff in it, but yeah. So that's Michael Myers for prologue of his book. Bob, you're here, eh?
Oh, yeah. I've been listening. But
how you doing? Do you? What do you mean that end? What do you mean? You're not going for the Guinness Book of Records?
I'm talking about ending
this whole mode.
The Vinnie Eastwood interview engagement.
Okay, I'm going to go off the phone. Can you engage him for a bit, man? I'd love to hear you chat with Vinny for a bit.
No,
do what you want to do. I'm not going
to. January.
What?
I need to be engaged first.
You need to be engaged?
Yeah, before I get married in January. Come on, engagement.
Yeah, I want to play some recordings. Now, you guys have been going on for a couple of hours. I think we're good.
Yeah. I've got to go get something to eat myself as well, actually.
So what comes next, Bob?
Comment on the recordings. I'll starve for a little while longer if you want me.
But what did you say about recordings?
You said you wanted to play some recordings, so if you want to.
You're welcome to stay if you want to hear them.
Okay.
I guess the evergreens.
All right. Well, let's roll the first clip. How long is it?
Why did Dave end up reading Michael Myers stuff?
Why? Because his show is called The Lighter Side of Genocide, so I thought he would really be interested in the forward of this thing, because that's highly on point of that topic, I thought.
Yeah,
and I thought he'd be interested in hearing that expressed because that book is rare. And I don't know what to say. You know, it's negative.
I actually do have an important point to raise on that as well. There was somebody a long, long time ago who saw people burning books of a particular type of knowledge, and he said the person who can bring themselves as a crowd to burn books will most certainly very shortly on thereafter start burning people. And I think it's very prophetic. And, mm-hmm. and I think this is what our problem is that we reject knowledge and we always use violence, don't we? I mean, I don't want any violence initiated by anybody. I believe in that non-aggression principle. Never, ever, ever initiate attack or violence or aggression on anybody, ever. Why would you do it? You're introducing darkness into a situation that didn't exist in the first place. You're creating it. I mean, this is what we're really powerful as human beings do. We've got the power to create things. We can create wonderful things that heal people and change the world for the better and enlighten and so on and so forth. But we can also manipulate and deceive and destroy everything that people hold dear with the stroke of a pen. Have you noticed? We've got a lot of power. And I think we should probably use that power for good purposes rather than destroying knowledge or rather than destroying people's lives. You know, I think that's pretty straightforward, I think.
We should get Ginny on. She disagrees with all that. She'd take you on hard. No, it's like, no, she's a really sweet
person. Get Henry Kissinger on.
Just thought, what?
What? I know, Vinny. You know, you don't really know. We need to make sure.
Vinny, meet Ginny. Vinny, meet Ginny. Yeah. Oh, dear. Now you'd love it.
Is Virginia here? Is she not here?
I doubt it. She's probably trying to get some sleep. She was going for about 30 hours, and then she's like, I got to deal with...
Can I ask you a question, Dave, before the recording? It's just about... I've heard your story before. I've listened to the archives. And now you're talking to Vinny now about the kind of broadcasting that he's doing. What's your experience of doing this back in the days when you were doing it?
It's a similar thing that he's experienced, except in a different media landscape. You know, I was kind of in the ghetto of the student radio, so it kind of resembled what he, you know, we had, I know, because it was in Toronto, it was an okay reach. You could still reach. You could have a sense of a bit of an audience or getting some kind of momentum of response or, you know, but it was just similar stuff with the, you know, there's, and it's everywhere, you know, office politics is, you know, the cliche. It's not reserved, just obviously the media stuff, but, you know, any kind of position of jobs with power and stuff like that, you know, you're going to have to do well in those kind of competitive environments. I don't know if I necessarily did. Well, I don't think I do. That's kind of why
well,
I
you put the hours into it, you put the early mornings, the late nights into it, and you really give it your all to do it. And
you're young. You did college radio?
No, I just heard your story with Bob before one of the recordings, and you spoke about how you spent hours doing all this news broadcasting.
Up all night. But I was young, so I could get by on 3 hours sleep without drops.
That's good. But you're glad to be away from it all now, I guess, and found the... Because you're very successful.
Look what happened to Walter Bode. He made all those amazing books and all that stuff, and, you know, I guess he, you know, married into a situation where, I guess, economically he was safe, I assume. I don't know how that works out. But I think Bob had expressed it. He had said, you know, because he wrote that amazing book, but he said, you know, reporting and exposing certain stuff, you know, he almost risked his family getting killed. And he's like, well, what, you know, if I lose my home and or I get crippled or my kids are killed or my wife is killed or something, what? So people can read this book. And it's like, is that what I'm going to get out of this? You know, so, you know, that, it becomes tough, too, you know. So it's like, you know, there's, I guess, perspective. I mean, Bob said recently that William Irwin Thompson, who's like, you know, one of his dialectics or dichotomies, rather, maybe is the whole, you know, institutions becoming bureaucracies and corrupt and crushing creativity and newness and blah, 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 and there are all these kind of qualities. I'm a little tired late. Versus some kind of, like, just pure, raw thing where people just be, like, childlike again and express themselves, and it's all natural. And it always just goes to shit real fast because, as Ion says, with humans, it always ends in tears. So that's a kind of by being indifferent to good and evil, maybe, then the ending in tears, well, you can, I don't know, not let it bother you so much and maybe notice it and avoid it if that's what you want to do.
Well, so what avenue of academia have you been?
Can I say something? I'm sorry to interrupt. I think Samwise Gamgee in The Lord of the Rings said it best. There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's sweet. I like, yeah, keep it alive for God. Well, no, maybe it's 50-50. I don't know. It doesn't appear that way. Who knows? Who fucking knows? Maybe it's your upbringing. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know what? But people are different in different situations, too, you know? And people have certain, you know, ideals and all that. Yeah. What was that film? What was the one with the guy? Who was the one in Hawaii? It had the nice Moby song in the soundtrack. Leonardo DiCaprio after Titanic. And remember the one guy they have like their little... What?
The beach.
Remember, the one guy gets his leg bitten by the shark, and oh, to help him, bring him back, and then he's moaning in pain, and after like about 2 days, people are like, Jesus, how long are we going to have to put up with this? So like, oh, we'll drag him outside. That's unfair to the majority of people still here. And remember the one French guy's out there, you people are fucking assholes, right? That's Vinny, you know?
Yeah, well, you've got to do the right thing, even if you're the small minority that nobody listens to. I mean...
I agree, buddy. You know what? You're the one guy there when no one else will help someone and they're seriously injured, and then later on everyone would say, that's what I would have done.
Yeah. Everybody else says that, but none of them actually fucking do it. The reality is you've got to tell yourself that you have to be that one. You have to be in the moment.
I put battery in the third one, so we've got...
Are you recognized for musicology now, David, in the academic sense in Canada? Is that for musicology or is it for...
What's musicology?
musicology, so you're one fifth of the whole academic structure of the whole thing now, yeah?
What? I don't get it. What's musicology?
Yeah, but apparently you're in Canada. You were voted some kind of fifth of.
No. You know what Bob was referring to? He mentioned that. No. CBC had a thing, and of course it'll mutate as time goes on. Just like, you know, Pet Sounds wasn't the number one album, you know, on Rolling Stone Top 100s probably till, you know, the 90s or something. But no, it was the CBC doc that they had done a few years ago. What were the top five albums in Canadian history? And, you know, so the biggies were obviously, you know, whatever, Neil Young, Harvey.
Well, you're recognized in the UK now. I've seen on Twitter, I've seen people talking about your band, like young kids saying, wow, these bands are brilliant. I can't think of your band's name now, but I've
Well, probably, no, the band that I worked with, now it's about ultimately 10 years ago, but that kids might still, in some sense, be rediscovering. It's like, look at this music, because the shift is so such that even stuff that's 10, 12 years old has a really different sense. Actually, it's the wrong sense to say, actually, because a lot of music sounds kind of samey, but yeah, maybe I take that.
Would I be able to play one of my songs through the Achieve Radio Network? I've got
If Bob objects to it, or if it's Bob's show, so you have to ask him. But ask Bob right now. Bob, what are we gonna do? Like, play it through your speak? What?
He wants to play
some music sample. What he's doing? Why not? Yeah.
Sure. You can play one.
All right.
Off of the YouTube link, I've just sent it to the Achieve Radio Skype thingy that you contacted me on yesterday. So you just go ahead and if you just go ahead and play that one for you, that would be great.
Now, who's this? This isn't Derek, right? Now, who's this?
This is Vinny Eastwood.
Sorry, Vinny. Okay, so you've got... Oh, so you make music, too. Oh, so you're going to play a sample of your music. Okay, sorry. Who's the other guy who we're speaking... What's your name? Robert. Okay, Robert.
Robert Bridge, Dave. I've heard all the... You're great, man. When you and Bob get together and you start nattering away, it's just, again, it's definitely in the top three.
So you're gonna play your song. So what, you're emailing it to Bob right now? Is that what you're doing? So that then you're gonna just hold the phone to the speaker? Is that what you're gonna do?
No. I've put it into the Achieve Radio Skype chat thingy. They messaged me while I was on hold. So if you there at the Achieve Radio board are with the Skype thing there, if you click on that.
Yeah, but Bob's in Hawaii. I don't know if he can do that. Because they're there.
Oh, I'm getting
it,
Dave.
Oh, Bill, you're there. Bill! I sound like Carolyn. No, I don't.
So Bill's got it. So Bill's going to play it?
Yeah, it looks like it.
It's going to take me about 90 seconds to get it queued up, so hang on, everybody.
Okay,
talk about yourselves.
Yeah, I'm going to play this. I'll play a nice little song here.
Oh, we don't need to play a song for...
No, he's going to play a song while your thing's getting set up.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a song while we're waiting for a song to play?
You're a competition, man. Yours better be good, because Bob's going to play some music first. Then yours is going to have to stack up.
Right.
No worries.
Wow, here it comes. Here comes the night. Here comes the night. Walking down the street, my girl, with another guy. His arm around her like it used to be with me. Oh, it makes me want to die. Yeah. Well, here it comes. Hello. together, wonder what is wrong with me. Why can I accept the fact she's chosen him and simply let them be? Whoa, 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 well, here it comes. Here comes the night. Here comes the night. Oh, 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 yeah. Him. He's turning down the lights and now he's holding her the way I used to do. I see her closing her eyes and telling him lies exactly like she told me to. Yeah, 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 well, here it comes.
That sounds the way Dave sings. Dave could sing that song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was younger, or now I can still sing like that. If I was
right.
In the booth,
so now
or my throat would hurt.
Now we're going
broken
to have
social
Vinny's
scene.
Song.
That's it.
We're gonna
broken
have Vinny's song now.
Scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here it is. Quiet, Rob.
Sounds kind of low. Can anybody else actually hear that?
We'll bring it up a bit if you can.
Yeah, we can hear it.
Rest in my eternal soul, it is time.
Activist theater group. You can go out and combine music part, and yeah, there's a lot of energy in that too. Use a lot of minor chords. You made a pop. You just say, what are the major chord substitutions? So it'll be ironic that it sort of sounds a bit sad, like a birthday song, but it's also a bit of a drunken wake or something.
Is that?
I liked it, man.
Is that Vinny singing?
Yeah.
Yeah, very different voice. Well, no, not different voice. I can see you singing that way, but you see, you got the tender, syrupy side. It's like a contrast to all the apocalyptic kind of landscape, too, that you're navigating through.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, package the poison with the cure.
And hey, imagine you put that through Marshall Amps, brother, and you could have a great punk band because it's, you know, it's... You think about it, you could just imagine that when you're just playing that whole song, if that was cranked up really loud and those, you know, A minor chords or whatever you're playing were going through a Marshall amp, suddenly like that, you know, it could be very powerful, you know, a live sort of punk thing, even at a slower speed, you know. Yeah, I liked it. It has potential. You know, own it down a little bit. I didn't hear all the lyrics completely, but I assume they're, yeah, all important and amazing. Yeah.
Well, you can.
You're a talented dude.
Why is this track called Cause Time? What's the real title of it? It's Cause Time.
No, it's called Happy Birthday.
No, it's Dave. Dave. Hmm. Tell him.
Say again.
What's this song, Cause Equals Time? What's the real title of the song?
Oh, you're talking about the Broken Social Scene tune?
Yeah, it's a cool.
Oh, Cause Equal Time that Bob sometimes plays. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, if you could play any track now of Broken Social Scene, what would it be?
Huh. Ooh. Well, I don't, you know, here I don't have the CDs. They're in the other building. I don't have stuff in here. Oh, but just theoretically? Oh, not start playing. Damn, I don't know, there's like about 40 tunes. I wouldn't know what to pick. It's a mood-based thing. I would play, if I was introducing for Virgin, would actually be weird because it's one of the few songs where it's not Kevin singing. I would actually play him the Stars and Sun song because it's just so groovy. I think, and the video's really cute for it. So I'd say, yeah, check that one out first. It's really colorful and you'll see artsy but kind of poppy and, you know, definitely had a good resonance in the 2001 with people kind of thing, too. It sounded fresh at the time, even though, I mean, how fresh is music? It's an amalgamation of all the cool stuff that came before it, ultimately. But, yeah, I think that, yeah, you'd like that one. I'd say start with that. Or if you want an instrumental for your activist TV show, well, no one would know the difference. Feel free to play on that album too. There's a thing called Pacific Theme. If you want to get like a more of a chilling West Coast California, you know, Johnny Carson vibe when you hit like really hard about people being tortured in Syria or something like that, you know, feel free.
Well, this brings an important scheme that I'm about to put into action at American Freedom Radio. My time zones change, like from winter to summer, so that during the summer in New Zealand we're broadcasting from midday till 2 p.m., but it never changes in the Northern Hemisphere, even though they're going into winter. So I thought, what a really good idea would be to replace all of my intro and outro songs with really summery type, you know, music, right, and what have you.
Yes.
So that all the people in the Northern Hemisphere are freezing their asses off, get reminded that it's summer somewhere,
yeah,
and all the people that are actually enjoying summer in New Zealand can really, really enjoy it every time they listen to the show as well.
That's right, you play Christmas music on June 21st.
Yeah. I love irony.
How come How come I've heard your song before, Vinny? Have you, has it been broadcast on the radio quite a lot or something?
I think I've broadcasted it twice before on radio.
Okay, is it on YouTube or something? Maybe it pops up on YouTube. Okay, I've heard it before. Yeah, it's good.
Oh, there's a whole album there, and people can download all of the tracks for free. They're on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Have a listen. If you like it and you want to support us making even more music, donate. It's the same principle that I do everything by. I just give people what they what I hope that they would like for free, and just hope that they give something back if they want, if they like it.
And when they don't, you're cool with that too, eh? Because that's going to happen, obviously. I mean, think about how many people send money for, you know, when you look on SoundCloud, how many people, after they listen to it as many times as they want, say, oh, I'm going to download that and pay money. Not many, when I look at the stats. What's that?
As long as, it doesn't really matter. As long as some money's coming in.
Yeah. But, Bob, can you pipe in here? Are you ready to pipe in? I love talking with you guys. I'm going to sign off on the thing just because I want to get in a bit of the mode of listening just on the speaks, because I've been on the phone. I've been on a lot today. So I'm going to get off now. But I've been enjoying speaking with you, Vinny, and you as well, Rob. And I'm sure I'll see your website and check out what you're doing. And all the best with your stuff, and look into Carolyn's stuff and Bob's stuff.
So all right. You're leaving, or are you just going to be passive and listen?
I'm going to be passive and listen, and I'm going to maybe go downstairs and make some tea and see if there's anything in the fridge and that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm going to still hang around. But I really enjoyed that. Vinny, lovely chatting with you, man, and best of luck with everything.
Yeah, listen to this. Carolyn, I got an email from Tariq in Los Angeles. He says, an ion portal activation. He says, how's that marathon going? Greetings to that doctor of the future who is truly a genius wizard. My RNA was lifted by the popos, that's the police, when they took my Volvo wagon. Got an S40 Volvo now. Miss you guys. So I responded right away. He sent that. And I said, we're doing great, and call in, Tariq. And I gave him the phone number. So we'll see if he calls in. I just happened to catch his email as it came in. So what we'll do is I'm going to play some recordings after the top of the hour, so I could play some music right now, Dave.
Sure.
Well, I'll fare thee all well also, because I'm getting reasonably late here and I'm kind of hungry and I've got like...
Are you getting peckish? You don't say that in New Zealand, do you?
No, we do say peckish. We're all fans of chicken.
What's the connection between peckish and fans of chicken? Are they fans of chicken? What's that?
How do chickens eat stuff?
How do chickens eat stuff? I don't know. You tell me. I'm not a farmer. Do they kind of bring in their beak if it's already broken down and bring it back and swallow it? What's going on? Am I like out of it? I'm tired. What am I missing?
What did you say, Carol?
How do chickens eat? They peck. Hence being peckish. Being alive.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I wrecked your joke, brother. My wit's gone for a second. Sorry, man. Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. That's good.
I like it. Myself.
What's that?
I think my joke, like many of my jokes, just wrecked myself.
Well, you don't. Well, no, you don't need jokes. You're more interesting without having to tell jokes, anyways.
Oh, I desperately need jokes, though. Desperately.
No, I need jokes desperately. He's wrong. I like it. All right, brother. You guys, I'll see you guys soon. All right. Oh, look, someone says, I'm looking at the chart thing, and Norma just said right now, Dave, send Vinny to howionic.com. So that's the recommendation.
That's an option.
I appreciate a good ironing.
Yes, how ionic. How ironic. How ionic. Oh, nice to meet you, Vinny.
Thanks, everybody. And make sure you send me Bob and Carolyn's Skype details. I'll schedule a slot for you guys to come on the show pretty soon, eh?
Awesome. You won't want us on. We don't agree with you at all. We wouldn't be popular in your audience. I don't think so.
But the thing is,
I like to do the opposite of what most radio show hosts do. I like to bring on people that I disagree with and find ways of agreeing with them in a nice, friendly atmosphere where we can have fun and you can express your ideas and won't be challenged.
No, I don't have any ideas. I don't speak English. I don't engage in intellectual discussions. I don't think
okay.
I'd be a very
well,
good guest.
It's just too late.
What? I'll come
I'll
on and play some music.
No, then.
I'll come on and play some music.
Every major academic sure. person didn't know Bob Dobbs, but they won't say anything that he's part of the curriculum. But when I was in Paris, Bob, you know, when I went to see Paul Lafferty, the Canadian
yeah.
artist?
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned there was a young boy there who basically he was part of the curriculum for creating the academic music curriculum. And I said, oh, you must know Bob Dobbs then, you know. Everybody knows Bob. I just think of the Fordham University and stuff. And I went, they went, no. And I mentioned Dave Newfield. And he goes, I've heard of him. I know him. So that's interesting to where you are. To this, is it this year? When did that Canadian connection come through, Dave?
When did the Canadian connection come through?
Yeah, the announcement that was.
Right. No, I mentioned that had come up. Yeah, no, Bob had mentioned. No, what it was they had a thing, and like I say, it does mutate. But this is like about 4 years ago, where they have a documentary, and they said the top five albums, or I guess modern albums in Canadian history, and number five was Broken Social Scene, You Forgotten People. So, but. That's their opinion at the time. But, yeah, so people thought it had cultural significance. So, but what you're suggesting is people still now or whatever, people that are younger still hear it for the first time and think, oh, this is some neat stuff.
That's probably why he recognized your name. That's when I was in Paris 4 or 5 years ago, so it was good. And, Paul Lafferty?
Yeah.
Do you know Paul? Because he's Canadian, isn't he?
Paul who?
Lafferty, he's a painter, an artist Bob shared. Yeah, he shared it on Five Bodies.
Yeah, Paul channeled Tesla.
Okay, guys, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
You're off.
All right.
Well,
yeah,
thank you very much.
Okay, me too. I don't want. Let me go off before you do, because I'm not the guest. Okay, I'm gone. Ciao.
And then I'm gone.
Can we play, too.